duties, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Hello again, Ironside Chatters, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. I'm Greg Carlwood from sunny San Diego, and today is a great day to be a THC fan. For a long time, I've wanted to have Professor Griff from the hip-hop group Public Enemy on the show. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just recently. Huge honor, and I love the content of Griff's lectures. We hit it all. Cat Williams, Dave Chappelle, ritual altars in the basements of record companies. It's a wild ride, and we know there's something mystical about the power of a good song. Why wouldn't the elite have this finely tuned tool squared aimly at keeping the masses down? We talk about how they use music and musical movements to do that. And just before we dive into the dark manipulation of the music world and hip-hop specifically, I gotta say we're only one episode away from another money bomb, and we're not doing so hot. I backed off talking about it because we were doing well with some of the other ones, but we're just over $200 with only a couple of days left to go. So please consider throwing in $5 or $10 by Sunday the 27th. You might end up seeing a couple $100 return, or at least you can hear from another listener that you would have helped on the next episode. And that's fun to do too, to know you contributed. So consider it. I'm going to play the longer spot to explain the money bomb just to break things up for anybody new. And on the other side, we're going to riff with Professor Griff. Hey people, I gotta take a second to tell you about something we do around here called the THC Money Bomb. What I do is every 5 episodes, I total up the donations I've gotten in that period of time, and half keeps me and the show going. I take the other half and I gift that back to a random listener. So far we're hitting about 500 each round, and I couldn't be happier about it. So consider throwing in $5 or $10. It's cheaper than a hand at the blackjack table with better odds than a scratch-off ticket. Plus, you know half supports a show you like, and at the very least, half will go to a like-minded person who could probably use a nice surprise in these troubled times. When you make a donation, I can see your email address, and that's how I pick the winner. But to keep things kosher, you can also get in the pool by sending your info on a postcard to me, Greg Carlwood, P.O. Box 635223, San Diego, California, 92163. I got no subscription fees here, no paid archives, no paid bonus shows, and I want to keep it that way, on principle. But I'm not a millionaire at the podcast on the side. This is it for me. And I'm the only one I know who's trying to help the people out as well.
That's my man!
So help me help you. If you want to play along, go to thehiresidechats.com/donate and get in the game. Dollars, bitcoins, it's all good to me. And that's what we call the THC Money Bomb. Boom. All right, Hireside Chatters, we're well aware that music, movies, and the Hollywood mind control machine are some of the most powerful culture-shaping tools of the nefarious elite, but understanding the finer points of that manipulation and its effects are crucial to lessening its power and efficiency. Lucky for us, we have one of the most knowledgeable educators on these topics, having experienced these things personally from the inside out, and more importantly, have lived to tell the tale. One of the founding members of hip-hop icon Public Enemy, author of several books, including The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, it's the Minister of Information himself, fighting the power longer than I've been alive. Professor Griff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it, man. That was a serious entry. Fighting the power as long as you've been alive. That's a good thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I really appreciate this. This is pretty awesome. You're one of my favorite speakers on the conspiracy scene, mainly because you're not just speculating about an industry you've studied. You've sat at the top of mainstream hip-hop culture, so I find your perspective to have a little more weight than the average researcher.
Oh, good. Thanks. I really appreciate that. I think a lot of people looked at my position as though it was race baiting slash outlandish kind of theories way beyond conspiracy, which we need to go into that conspiracy thing, because a lot of people use that as a trigger code word to throw their defenses up and readily dismiss it. So, but it was none of that. It was just perspective from which I was coming from, mm-hmm. being a young black man from a black neighborhood in Long Island, New York. I was only giving it to the people the way I experienced it. And then when the Public Enemy thing hit, it just kind of took on another life. And people will be surprised about some of the experiences we have growing up. And you know, we don't charge it to people to look at that person and say, okay, that's the totality of what that person is about and how they think. That's just how, you know, we grew up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've met some white people that haven't, that never seen black people except on TV. And then when they finally got a chance to meet some black people, they're like, wow. To hear those stories is mind-numbing. Like, wow.
Well, I'm kind of guilty of that, man. It does happen. I grew up in the Midwest, and I didn't really have any black friends until college, and I wasn't much into the hip-hop scene. I was more into the punk music scene, but it's really a similar message, you know, speaking truth to power, distrusting the machine.
Right.
And I got criticized a bit for going down this conspiracy lane during those years, but the unified theme amongst the black friends I'd made in college was that they were already on that page. Wow. They already knew about the power structure. They already knew about the man. And they had to deal with it a lot more in their own life, so they didn't have the illusions that everything was fine like some of the guys I grew up with.
Right,
and
right,
that
right.
was something I thought was interesting and always really respected. But to get this ball rolling, man, you were talking about this stuff before the internet had really taken off, so it had to be more shocking for people. They weren't allowed to sift through the information like they are now. But let me ask you about your awakening and how it affected your career, because the media gatekeepers, they kind of put you through the ringer for speaking truth from such a public stage. And it takes some balls, man, but I'm sure it had its fair share of consequences too. What was that process like?
Well, I don't know if I can explain the process, but I can explain some and go through some of the experiences that I had, even starting out with black people, namely inside of the camp. Inside of the Public Enemy camp, inside of the community, you know, which is one of those kind of things. Well, how do you know this? Do you really believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you prove that? And then when you prove it, I keep telling people, I don't say these things and present this body of work to people for them to, i.e., believe it. I don't put it in that context, nor do I put it in that box. I don't care whether or not people believe it. It's not up for you to believe or disbelieve. We need to figure out whether or not, if these things have happened, are they true? Who are the culprits? Can we name the names and name the companies and organizations so we can prevent this thing from happening again? Because it seems like once the trick and the plan works, it seems like they repeat it over and over and over again, and they never stop.
Yes. I definitely
see that.
So that
whole... that whole experience to me was very challenging, if I could use that word, simply because the people around me, and then the whole idea of racism, white supremacy, and then not understanding racism, white supremacy, because when I got among other people, other races, it was like, first of all, how do you know that? You're a young black guy from the hood. How would you get enough material together? Where are you going? Where are you getting this from? Remind you, we're talking about before the internet.
Yeah.
So it was unheard of. There's a saying among black people, you want to hide something from a black person, you put it in a book. Because we will never find it. And this is sad, but it's very true in most cases. So that wasn't true in my case. It wasn't true in Chuck D's case. It wasn't true in a lot of people's cases that I know, that I surrounded myself with. So we did go to the books. We did cross-reference. We did create formulas that we can extract bits and pieces of this information and put it together in a collective body of work, which served as the backing and the foundational material for Public Enemy songs. So that process was very, very, very complicated. Finding it, and then breaking out of that invisible kind of ceiling they have you in, that box that they have you in, to the point where we can understand it coming from a young white guy, because he has access to this information. He has resources. He has family members. He has, you know, hell, he has a car to get to the goddamn library. but you, it's very difficult for us to accept that coming from you. And then on top of all of that, we don't even believe you.
Right.
So it's like, so when you prove these things and present the body of work, you leave it up to the person to convince themselves.
Yeah. It's the kind of material that we're dealing with has been propagandized for years and years, so it elicits an emotional response when it shouldn't. You end up defending the people who are keeping you down because you just don't have any guidance in the other direction.
But we have to ask the question, why does it elicit an emotional response, first of all?
Right. That's
programmed. I think we can go over and over and over a body of work that we can honestly, you and I could get together and prove without a shadow of a doubt, like many have done with the JFK assassination, and we can prove that the CIA, Mafia, United States government, and a few other people was complicit in the assassination of JFK. We could present the body of work. We could do a scholarly work. We could present it without a shadow of a doubt. And there will still be some people that says, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's JFK. It's funny you bring that up because I had just said the other day, you know, a couple of people were arguing about it. And I try to unite all the people that are on the alternative side because that's the only strength we have is our numbers. And I said, you know, instead of arguing about who specifically killed JFK, why don't we have a conversation about why we have so many secretive, powerful organizations that are capable of capping a president in the first place? You know, mm-hmm. Why don't we have that conversation?
Exactly. I think once we have that conversation, I think the people that thrive on keeping the confusion going, even among people that buy into and use this whole conspiratorial view of events and history, I think they want to keep the confusion up.
Yes. Yeah, that's key. That's key to keeping us divided.
Right, exactly. And I refuse to allow them to do that with me. And the second thing is, I refuse to allow them to pigeonhole me into this whole race baiting thing, but because Griff may use a certain term when it comes to white people, all of a sudden you dismiss me. So then when I come back and I explain these terms and make it very, 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 very clear, but they say, yeah, but 20 years ago you said this. And I say, okay, well, I could take your life and put your life under a microscope, and we can go back into your life 20 years ago. You probably said a few other things that probably wouldn't sit right with black people. So let's stop that. That's childish.
Right. Yeah, I totally
agree. All of us have said some things in our ignorance.
100% agree. Let's talk about hip-hop a little bit, man. I mean, I know the music has changed a lot in the past 30 years. It seems pretty clear to go from a place where groups like Public Enemy are putting out songs like Fight the Power to now hit songs or things like Lick It Like a Lollipop and Pussy Patrol. That hasn't been an accident. But more importantly, I don't think people realize how much their brain absorbs. And this has some pretty serious consequences for youth culture, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. But when you say youth culture, far and far beyond that, it's a culture of hip-hop alone, not to mention the subtle implications. I think those same people that some of these songs are directed towards should have guardians and should have parents to protect the culture of hip-hop, all right, to defend it. B, to protect their children from some of the madness that's coming across in some of these songs. And we have neither. Mm-hmm. We have neither, simply because the songs that come across the airways are directed at younger people, but we find the older people partying and popping their finger to it and nodding their head and shaking their butt to it, to the point where we don't begin to think to defend children from the madness. Why? Because, oh, wow, it's Kanye West, that's Jay-Z, that's Rihanna, that's Beyonce. You know, they're mm-hmm. top of their game, and this, that, and the other. So we kind of figure it's safe for us as an adult. But the children are listening. The children are watching. Mm-hmm. There's this whole idea, and I think you and I grew up at a time where they made alternative versions of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't make these versions anymore. I don't know if you've heard it, but when was the last time you heard a version of, clean version of, Pussy Patrol.
Yeah, I don't think I have.
Right. So my thing, but listen, neurologically speaking, the brain computer doesn't work that way. You know, the brain computer fills in the blanks. Mm-hmm. So you could have a song, and then you could turn the word backwards. The brain will turn it right back around. You could leave the word out. The brain will just fill it in.
Oh, that is an interesting aspect to it, the subliminal.
Oh, of course, because that's a trick that they play. If you study Stephen Jacobson's work, Mind Control in America, there are different techniques that they use, i.e. backward masking, where mm-hmm. they turn the words around, and then the brain computer figures it out and turns it back around. Another technique is called double speak.
Yes.
This technique that George Bush used 8 years in the White House. You could be listening to a speech of his and he's sounding like he's speaking English, but he is, but he's using a thing called double speak, and he's speaking right past your consciousness.
Right.
And then last but not least, they have these techniques where you could take the word, you could leave the word out, blank space there. And once that blank space is created, the brain, like the computer, locates a word and puts the word in its place.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and it's not even a word that you would probably recognize. Or, no, for example, let me test you for a second. You ever heard of this drink? It came out with a drink called the Sobe. S-O-B-E. Have you
ever
seen it?
Yes.
What does Sobe mean?
I don't know.
You just admitted that you've heard of it and you've seen it, but yet you don't know what it means. So that word is stored in your brain somewhere, and when the brain needs it, it'll go get it and fill in the blank. And you don't even know what it means.
Right.
You've driven in a car called the Acura. What does Acura mean?
Yeah, no idea.
Listen, from this day forward, test yourself with this. And whoever hears this interview, I want them to test themselves. Let's stop using words that we don't know the definition of.
Yeah, that
seems
smart.
Let's see how much we really know.
Yeah.
So when we see the bobbleheads on the alphabet gang, ABC, CBS, CNN, when we get the information from the DOD, Department of Defense, FBI, CIA, and the rest of these people, we'll know for sure what kind of agenda is coming across once they start using those words that we're familiar with and those words that we know the definition and the meaning of. Because I'm telling you, they're pulling this thing over on the vast majority of us who claim to be halfway smart. And we are losing when it comes to the children. This hip-hop, pardon me, rap today, not hip-hop, because that stuff is not hip-hop, as you already know. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between rap and hip-hop. Hip-hop is who you are. Rap is something that you do.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that again, real slow. Rap is something that you do. Hip-hop is something that you are. You and I are hip-hop. We don't have to claim it. We just be ourselves. Are you following me?
Yeah, yeah.
Other people got to dress up in it and act it out. What they end up doing is they marry this other stuff onto hip-hop. They marry pornography onto hip-hop, and it becomes hip-hop. They marry the street gang, criminal, jail, prison culture onto hip-hop, and it becomes hip-hop. And then those of us that are hip-hop have to begin to defend hip-hop for what it really is. And hip-hop is based on the four fundamental definitions of what hip-hop actually is, based on the four fundamental definitions of the universe: earth, air, fire, and water. So we created b-boying with breaking. We created DJing, MCing, graph writing. And then last but not least, the fifth element is knowledge itself. This is what you and I are doing right now, mm-hmm. having a conversation about hip-hop and dropping knowledge and understanding things.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's cool. I wanted to ask you, because you have lived in this for a while, and I wondered if you find it easier to identify that type of character assassination and marginalization that happens to performers when they're trying to expose the truth, kind of like what happened to you. Do you find it easier to identify it when it's happening to other people now because you've lived it?
Wow, that's a very good question, a very interesting question, because I've seen it happen to other people, and I'm like, wow, it's the same exact thing they did to me. And then when I came back with my book, after getting thrown under the bus, after getting shot at, house burned down, poisoned, and a few other things, I survived it all, and I'm here.
Yeah, good God.
So when I put the information in my book to see whether or not these people are going to respond, they didn't even respond. And that's a technique that they use. They'll put the story out about you. They'll destroy you. They'll get your friends to work against you, hoping that either A, one of your friends will kill you, or you'll kill your damn self. And then if you survive all of that, you become insignificant. So they never expected me to walk across the stage to receive one of the highest honors in music, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I saw that. Congrats.
They weren't planning on me being there. They would have had a picture up in the memory of Professor Griff, who contributed to the Public Enemy, legacy. Yeah. And it's like, come on, man. Come on. But I'm here simply because, and this is going to sound strange to a lot of black people, I'm here simply because there were some very strong and intelligent young white guys who said, now, wait a minute, above and beyond Professor Griff's growing up in a black neighborhood, not really having connection and communication with white people, what he's actually saying is actually true. Mm-hmm. Beyond some of the things that we think may be kind of racial, what he's actually saying is true. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? So when I wrote my book, Analytics, one of the first things I put in there was when I was a child, I spoke as a child. And now that I'm a grown man, I put away childish things. Let's put all the race stuff aside and let's deal with what this thing really, really, truly is. I know and understand, mind you, I'm not using the word belief, that the same people that orchestrated the assassination of Malcolm X, orchestrated the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, orchestrated the assassination of both Kennedy boys.
Yeah.
Orchestrated the attempted assassination of Reagan.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? It was the same ones responsible and in cahoots with the same people that brought the towers down in New York are the same people that are at work right now and probably are the same ones behind not only the anthrax scare and all these other chemical and biological warfare scares are the same people that's behind the Malaysian Flight 370 that's missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a theory kind of that if you can see it on every news channel, if you can walk into a grocery store and bring up the topic to the cashier, then it's probably not a real story. If everybody knows about right, it, they're exactly. shoving it down your throat.
Yep, and it's something that they want you to believe, not something that they proved to you and you made your own conclusion. They've given you your conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree, man. Let me ask you about an example of that marginalization, because I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy, and a recent example of this kind of marginalization, I'm sure you'd agree, was Cat Williams. I mean, not only is the guy super funny, but he would weave messages of empowerment and positivity into his material, which, of course, the powers that be don't want you to do, but he also would hint at some of the things he was exposed to as the Hollywood elite started to let him into their realm, which is also off limits. And as a consequence, he's been marginalized in a big way, put through the ringer. I mean, do you think that's a pretty fair assessment of what's happened to him?
Exactly. And I think me having my finger on the pulse and me living that particular experience, watching Cat Williams, and just like you, I think he's funny as hell.
Yeah.
I think he's very witty, very clever. And the issues that he brings up in his routine are thought-provoking, and he's a very funny guy. But when I seen him talking about these secretive, elitist kind of things that he was alluding to, I said, no, don't go there. You understand what I'm saying? Because once you start revealing that, and because they're watching also. They're always watching. Once you start going there, then they will, they'll kind of marginalize you, shut you down, control you. And they do it in subtle ways. They'll offer you a television show or a reality show.
Yeah.
You know? But they'll make certain things available to you so you don't, you can kind of lay off the other stuff. And it wasn't like I wasn't offered these things back in the day. You understand what I'm saying? But
right.
I think what they tried to do and attempted to do to kind of quail or quiet it down via the record company, but I was never signed to Def Jam.
Mm.
And I don't think people know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That was like a bullet point on my Professor Griff 101, I thought.
No, I was never signed to Def Jam. Chuck D and Flavor Flav was signed to Def Jam. Me and Terminator, our contract was with Public Enemy Live.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes all the difference, because Def Jam is at the head of a lot of trouble.
Right, exactly. So when it came to the whole idea of who is this Professor Griff guy speaking up and speaking out, he's not even part of the group. He's a stage prop. He's this, that, and the other. And this is how I was getting talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I wanted at that time was for those around me that knew the truth to just stand up. You don't have to defend me. Defend the truth.
Yeah.
So I think the situation with Cat Williams is very obvious. So as soon as Professor Griff connected the dots and I put it out there, listen, they're going to come after Cat Williams. They're going to do X, Y, and Z. And sure enough, it left my lips. No more than 3 to 6 months later, we started seeing Cat Williams on the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getting in fights with people in Walmarts, all kinds of...
Right. Exactly. And there's a movie. I'm sure you've seen it. It's called Brotherhood of the Bell.
Brotherhood of the Bell, yeah.
Brotherhood of the Bell. The same exact thing happened to that gentleman. As soon as he started revealing some of the secrets, these minor things started happening to him in his home, in his workplace, and other places. And we look at it like, ah, that's just a coincidence. No, it's not. These people orchestrate these things.
You brought up being offered things, which kind of triggered in my mind, I wonder about Dave Chappelle, because it kind of seems like he was in a situation where the guy just didn't want to be used. I think he saw how he was being used. Maybe he didn't totally know why at the time, but now a lot of researchers speculate that the Chappelle Show was used as a primer to get white America ready for a president like Obama, which is really interesting, but it seems like he kind of... He was offered, I guess, the big number is $50 million, and he just kind of was like, nope, not doing it, and he took off, you know? And I wonder if this is kind of in that same realm.
Well, I know it is, because you have to understand something. They operate on both sides, and we have to stop looking at like they're one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And they're absolutely not one-dimensional. They operate on both sides, and they control and manipulate both sides. And this is how we have to begin to approach understanding what these people do. So on one hand, they're the ones that's offering Dave Chappelle the money. And second hand, they're the ones that are dictating to Dave Chappelle on what to do. Now, when he says, no, I don't want to do it, they're the same ones that's orchestrating his exit, because they still want to control him even after the Africa trip.
Yeah.
You understand? Listen, they're in this for the long haul. They don't do this just for the weekend or lunch break. They have to manipulate and control the entire situation.
Right. They are infinitely patient, which is one of the really frustrating things about it, because life is so short.
And whereas you and I would forget after a weekend. If I got into an argument last Friday with you at the bar or at the club, a couple of weeks go by, man, I see you again, man. Yo, I'm sorry about that. Now I was a little tipsy, blah, 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 blah. We can give each other a hug and go on about our business.
Yeah.
These characters never forget, and they never stop.
Right, yeah. They are definitely ruthless. And, you know, since I have a genuine person from the music industry here, I've got to ask you about this way the Hollywood mind control machine works, because so many people talk about these celebrities and artists, and you hear things about this $21 million club, this idea that artists will reach a certain height in their career, and then some will be given a choice to reach the heights of fame and fortune in exchange for like a blood sacrifice and an oath of loyalty. Do you see this as a major method of getting artists to play ball?
Well, my thing is, if the allure of you being rich and famous and successful and having enough money to buy anything that you want to. Someone growing up poor, really not having anything, which is the majority of us, right?
Right.
The lure of living this kind of life is attractive to any one of us. And those who say, well, it's not to me, you're lying. No one wants to live poor.
No
one wants to live like that. So the whole idea of you having two or three cars and a couple of homes and living in the finest place, eating the finest food and going where you want to go and doing what you want to do is very attractive. So I think that's one thing that they had in our life. Listen, you and I can both agree, both black and white, America's a fucking lazy.
Yep.
We want to reap the benefits, the most benefits with the less amount of work, right or wrong.
Right.
Okay, so then in understanding that they know exactly how to lure you in to try to give you those finer things in life that will attract you, and you fall for it, hook, line, and sinker, because you're operating from your lower energy centers. You want your urges and your desires met. These people have enough money and power to have your wildest fantasies and dreams come true. People that have put themselves together and put themselves in a position that can do that, oh yeah, they have a lot of power over the average person. a lot of power.
And I can imagine some of the egomaniacs in both Hollywood and the music industry would probably be okay with, you know, capping off a girlfriend, letting their mother die under plastic surgery, because, you know, they'll have a grieving period, but on the other side of that is infinite fame and fortune. So I'm sure there are people who make that choice.
Well, there's a lot of things that we can actually honestly sit here and mention and attribute it to certain individuals. You sacrificing a family member is absolutely nothing to these people. It's almost like if you don't, then you're not loyal to us. And I think that's the conversation that we are not having. What is the price that you will pay to be rich and famous? That is the question we need to ask. What is that price? What does that look like?
Right.
You understand? I'm saying, what price would you pay? And my thing is, we don't know these particular individuals. Some of us may allow our mom to get sacrificed. Some of us will allow our girlfriends and wives to get sacrificed. And we need to understand that. But my thing is, I don't want people to think that these people are beyond this. They're not.
Right.
They're not. You and I both know, personally speaking, what our threshold is. And there's just certain things I'm not going to do. And unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, one of mine was the fact that I'm not going to apologize for the truth. Kill me, poison me, burn my house down, shoot at me, do whatever you feel that you need to do, but I'm not going on record to apologize for the truth. I'm just not doing it. It just has to stand for what it is. And, you know, other people around me have taken it, and they, of course, they probably live a better life. I'm just not apologizing for the truth. The truth is a lot larger than grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't apologize for the truth.
Yeah, man. Well said. Well said. Amen. Let me ask you about another dark rumor of the music industry. They talk about, a lot of researchers and guests that I've had will talk about the importance of occult magic and satanic rituals performed in secret surrounding the release of like a chosen album. And I've heard people suggest that some of these albums are engineered to be hits and they're first laid upon the altar and embedded with demonic energy, the ashes of children played during orgies, all this sort of weird stuff that's going on in the shadows. I mean, have you found any truth to that at all?
Oh, wow. So much truth to that. Some people have actually admitted to me in private, which I can't mention their names.
Of course.
Have admitted to me in private the whole idea of black and white magic being performed on a high scale, dealing with frequencies and vibrations and the spirit realm. And, you know, leaving some of those conversations and saying to myself, okay, well, I don't do the belief thing. So let me see whether or not if this kind of stuff actually is true and actually works. And I say to myself, I sit back and I watch that some of these people that obviously took the oath, I just say to myself, have taken the oath rather. I say to myself, okay, well, let me listen to the song. I listen to the song, and the song really doesn't move me in that kind of way. But 2 weeks later, the constant repetition, 13, 14 times, you know, a day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The video is played, the song is played. That person shows up in a commercial, in a magazine, in the next, you know, Tyler Perry movie that comes out, and a few other things that go on. You see this person over and over. It reinforces it. All of a sudden, now you're walking through Walmart and you're humming a song. How does that happen?
Yeah, man, I hear you. They get me with that same kind of stuff.
Right, right. We have to start to look at that and say, wait a minute. How did they pull that off? 2 weeks ago, I didn't even like the damn song.
Yeah, man, that's so true. And when you look at like the Super Bowl and the Grammys, you look at some of these halftime performances, these big performances, they're full of weird ritual and symbolic messages. But it's clear to see that, but it's hard to define what the effects of that would be.
Well, it's easy to see the effects. The thing is, it's harder to attribute those effects to those particular rituals.
Yes, well said.
For example, we just talked about that, the frequencies. Well, and setting up the altars. Well, you know, John Todd talked about that. And as I speak about that in my book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop, to this day, they can't find John Todd's body. And he was the one that said, no, they do have altars set up at record companies, in the basement of the record company. They do perform black and white magic. And they do go through these satanic kind of rituals over the music. And they are responsible for putting these low vibratory frequencies in the music. They do put these images out there to the point where they make it very fashionable to wear these things. And they try to invoke the spirit of the Baphomet, these evil demonic entities. So these people know exactly what they're doing. Guess what? If those of us that see them doing this, we're uneducated and we don't know what they're doing, so we write it off as entertainment. And when we write it off as entertainment, your cultural defense mechanism is down. Your cultural guard is down. And once your cultural guard is down, then it's like, well, listen, you said you were into punk?
Yep.
Okay, when did the demonic frequency enter punk to the point where it started demonizing punk rock?
Huh, that's an interesting question. They definitely took the teeth out of that aggression. I felt like I kind of grew out of it, but there was a change. In the mid-90s, probably around the same time they were changing hip-hop, punk music got neutered, and they started calling it pop-punk and emo and blurred those lines, and all the songs were heartbreak and relationship bullshit, but it was never about anything important.
Okay, a minute ago, it wasn't about that. It wasn't about that a minute ago with punk. Punk was aggressive, hardcore. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
And they definitely made it popular in the late 90s. Bands like Newfound Glory and Taking Back Sunday, they would say they were punk, but all their songs were just about crying over some girl. And that's not what punk music was about.
Exactly. What they did was they shifted the entire paradigm of punk to soften you up to the point where you weren't aggressive anymore. Then they introduced a certain drug. Then they introduced a certain thing that you had to wear and the way you had to be in order to even enter into that punk scene.
Yeah, man.
Or the realm of punk.
Totally a parallel trajectory to hip-hop, it seems.
Exactly. And then you found yourself a hardcore punk head. You understand what I'm saying? You found yourself at a fucking Backstreet Boys concert and an NSYNC concert fucking dancing. Yes, you did.
Oh, that's funny, man.
Because they pulled it over on you, and it worked.
Yeah, it did for quite a while. And let me bring up another thing that I've heard you talk about in presentations, because a lot of people are aware of the subliminal sexual messages in advertising and Disney movies, but I've heard you talk about the musical connection to these images, and that's a detail that we don't hear covered all that much. Can you tell us how that works? It's kind of in line with what we're talking about.
Well, in studying subliminal ads, studying corporate ads, studying the techniques that they use to get people, the unsuspecting masses of the people, to participate in advancing their cause, not ours, because their cause is hidden inside of the subliminal messages, and we carry it out like automatons. We do it automatically, and we're unaware of the techniques that they use. So in studying some of these particular techniques, I went out to see whether or not if some of these techniques actually work. And some of the stuff I uncovered, I found those techniques activated and operating among a people, i.e. black people, that we never ever paid attention to some of these products that was only designed and meant for white America. I said to myself, how is this happening? There's just certain cultural trends that we have. And some of those cultural trends, we'll mention them in the song. So what black people were doing was taking the average thing that white America know and accustomed to, and we will flip it, and using a different form of alchemy, we'll change it and flip it and make it hip-hop. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So then if you look at some of the things, for example, if we talked about Double Dutch and Lemonhead candy and Pop-Tarts and all this other kind of stuff. We would take stuff like that and put it in a song, and it means something totally different to black people. But now, what about the subliminal messages behind some of these products that we never knew was put among us for a specific reason? A, to sedate and control us. So when I started looking at the banking system, You get an ATM card, you kind of figure you got money in the bank, you can go to the ATM, and you can take your little $20 out, and they tax you $1.50 every time you do that.
Yep.
Fine, but now what about the logo of the bank? So I do this lecture entitled The Triple Alphabet Theory, and I connect the banking system with the food industry. The food industry, which are going to use food as a weapon, you know that,
yep,
with the military-industrial complex. Then I connect that to the prison-industrial complex. And you start to look at the logos. It's like, wait a minute, okay, why do we keep getting these three colors? Why are we getting the square? Why are we getting the circle within a circle? Why are we circle within a triangle? What does this sign mean? What does this logo mean? When you start connecting the dots, you put it in front of you on black and white piece of paper and you start to break them down. You start to understand that these people, corporations, are connected to these people, i.e. Hollywood is connected to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the Pentagon want to sedate the people on a subliminal level to control the people via Hollywood? These are the questions that start to come up. So when you start looking at these subliminal symbols, they start affecting different parts of the body, i.e. your chakras, your energy centers. We want to calm you down? Oh, then, okay, then we'll make this color very popular and this kind of music very popular. You and I would think these two have nothing to do with one another. Music industry and these advertisers have nothing to do with one another. Right, sure they don't. They have everything to do with one another.
Yeah, man, it's all sedation.
Exactly. And we don't realize it simply because it's done so subtle to the point where, let me tell you something, these men call themselves men of towardness. And they move towards their ultimate goal, whether you know it or know it not.
Right.
And just when you think they've stopped, these people have this ongoing, 24/7, 365 and a quarter days. They never stop. They work in shifts. When you and I have to go to bed and go to sleep, they're up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're up working very, 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 very hard. And listen, so when you start to look at the color codes, which one of us will stop and think that, wait a minute, your lower energy centers are red, orange, yellowish. Why would they make all the food places, Murder King,
right,
Drunken Donuts, Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDevil's, all these places are red and orange because they're trying to appeal to your lower energy centers.
Yeah.
They want you to be hungry. You're asking, just got up from the table and ate a full course meal. Once you see one of them commercials, you're hungry again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is right in line with something that... Oh, sorry, man. I was going to say, this is right in line with something I'd heard you talking about, that this is kind of the method behind the modern rap music having such heavy bass, for example, that these very tones they use actually manipulate us on a subliminal level.
Right, but now how do you explain this to the people? That only one here... It's like, yo, bro, you listening to this, man, and... Before I met you like 10 years ago, right? He's like, no, I met you like 7 years ago up in the Bronx. But you didn't even smoke then, dude. You didn't drink. You was cool. You went to Catholic school. You had a good education. What happened? Oh, no, man. You know, I'm just saying, you're just saying what? Something in the music, something in the advertising, something in the way that you're resonating with this thing has turned you against yourself.
Yeah.
You don't want to admit it.
Yeah, I hear you. And I really enjoy when I hear you relating hip-hop to the seven chakras and its ability to raise one's vibration, because I like the bridging of those two cultures. And it's really interesting to hear about hidden knowledge and all their cultures to me. Obviously, Eastern cultures were onto this stuff with Buddhism and meditation.
Right.
African and Native American cultures were onto this with rhythmic drumming and dancing to induce like a higher meditative state. But then, you know, I look at the history of my culture, of white culture, and all I find about white people is a long history of enslaving and destroying all of those cultures that were harmonious and lived in a way that I want to live. And I don't want to say it's hard being white, but it's definitely embarrassing. And when you look at the history of Europeans, you should have some white guilt. We've ruined everything.
Yeah, but you know, to have that discussion as a white guy, you would fare. I wouldn't fare. You're being racist.
Right.
You hate white people. That whole thing will get stuck on me. But if you present it in a way where you can prove these things by proving these things via history, then you might win a few people over. But the vast majority of the people who refuse to buy that and purchase that line of thinking, you'd be hard pressed, man, to keep friends, man. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And they'll look at it like that's a broad stroke to indict all white people, and whole white people responsible for their father's behavior throughout history. But all of the people, not all of the people, the vast majority of people who are bringing and ushering in this way of peace,
mm-hmm.
including white people, the vast majority of white people are not going for that. I'm sorry. You're not going to talk this and peace that and expect the vast majority of white people and nowadays and black people to go for it. It's just not going to happen.
Well, you know, if we're going to get real deep and real honest, I think that there is something to be said about the fact that, you know, a lot of white people might see the conspiracy and they might want to talk about change, but they can't talk about it too much because they do have an advantage. And if you talk about it too much, and some changes,
no, you're right.
It's messed up, man. I mean,
no. It really is.
You have mm-hmm. to be able to take solstice a little bit in the fact that you can look back to a long history of culture and a long history of kind of being in tune with the earth. You know, the white race is really the only race that doesn't have that history. It's just destruction.
Right, but you know something, and I think even on top of that, I think we have to be able to start looking at being in sync and starting with the self.
Right.
And the only way I'm going to be in sync with you simply because based on the history of the two people and everyone else in between, we both have to have something in common. And I think that thing that we have in common, we're human. I think the thing that we have in common is the fact that we both want peace. We just have different methodologies on how to get there.
Absolutely.
But I think a lot of us are on the same page. And the main problem we have is getting the other people out of our business. If they left you and I alone, we could probably get along.
Yeah.
You and I being representative of the black and the white races,
mm-hmm.
we would probably get along.
Absolutely.
We get along at the raves. We get along at the party. We get along at the club. We get along. So, you know, we have music. We have some quote unquote stimulants. And we have some food. We have some conversation. We can get along. Above and beyond that, they exacerbate the tension between the races and it becomes a problem.
Yeah. And people talk a lot of shit on video games, and I get that. But there is something to be said about when you sit down and play Call of Duty and you find out that the guy on the other side of the headset is in Afghanistan, you're like, wait a minute, we're doing the same thing here, man. You know, we're all kind of the same. Like, so I think there's something to be said about that connection.
Right, exactly. And I think it's fostered by this illusion that we are supposed to be at odds with one another.
Yeah,
you could play the game. You could play the video game for 2 hours, and you never knew that this guy was somewhere in Afghanistan, and you competing against him. But now the whole game changes, and the whole idea of the vibration and the energy change as soon as you find out where he's from. You know why? Because the news have taught you that we're supposed to be at odds, and these people are supposed to be the enemy. Stop that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only power we really have is our numbers. So, of course, divide and right. conquer is the main tactic against us. But let me bring up another topic that has been in your big lectures, and it seems to have kind of drifted into the background of conspiracy culture. And that's this goal to implement every American with a microchip to better control them. I mean, this was big for a while, but now we see with this Obamacare bill how they're going to try to implement it, right? I've heard you talk about this quite a bit. This is a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal simply because the other methods that they used didn't work. What was this? They tried to implement it via the whole H1N1 vaccination program.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's supposed to get vaccinated. Well, stupid idiots forgot to make the syringes to accompany the implantable biomicrochip. They didn't make them big enough.
Hmm.
Wow. This is actual fact.
Yeah.
So they had to recall it, pull it back, and people had to get the shots again with a different syringe. This would have put the implantable biomicrochip in all of us because it was mandatory that we get these particular shots. Well, if you're against vaccinations, then you would never get it. So then they had to force the vaccinations in the schools, especially with your children. And then not only that, that would weaken you. And then the whole idea of chemtrails, fluoride in the water, oh, they were going to weaken you and get you one way or the other. They are determined to make you a weak, subservient, mind-controlled debt slave.
Yep.
And this is their goal.
Yeah,
and I hear a lot of people wanting to prove Professor Greer wrong, but I say, listen, bring it, man. Shit. Come on. I'm ready for that challenge.
Yeah, the facts are on your side, man. The facts are definitely on.
Exactly.
It's a messed up world, man. Another kind of fringe area that I'm interested in that I know you kind of dabbled in, which was interesting to me, kind of. I didn't really expect it, but the power of crystals. I mean, there's so many posers and weirdos in that world that it's sometimes hard for me to take it serious, but you know, there's got to be a little bit of truth in it. I mean, there's so many people going down that thread. You've kind of found some strength in keeping certain crystals around, haven't you? They kind of counteract Wi-Fi signals and those kind of negative electrical charges.
Exactly. And I do it every day. But it's just one of those things that I've shifted my gears on. And I just really stopped talking about it in my lecture because I found that it brought the weirdos out. They started talking spooky to the point where they made it seem like what I was saying was extra spooky. And I'm like, no, this is ancient science, and this is very real. This is very real. So diodes and certain crystals to do certain things to protect your energy center, to protect your aura, elevate your sixth, seventh, and eighth sense, stimulate your 12 melanated centers. And then when you start to get into the science of the crystals, it's only for a few, bro. It's not for all of us. Because the average person is going to write it off like, you know. And then the sad part about it, the average person already have the crystal in the phone. They already have the crystal in their earrings or their ring they're wearing on their thing or their necklace, but they just don't understand the properties of it.
Yeah.
It benefits.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So it's up to us, those of us that, you know. And it's not, so I keep telling people, it's not something you have to believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah, man. I mean, and it is so obvious that this attack is so multifaceted. Fluoride, chemtrails,
right.
Microchips.
Right.
I mean, it's so multifaceted, and we really have to get on the same page because, like I said, our biggest advantage is our numbers. And if the elite can kind of convince the public that the economy sucks because Mexicans are crossing the border or it's a dangerous world because all the Muslims are terrorists, these are the first illusions we got to be able to see through, because if we're ever going to overcome this, I mean— Recently, they actually put out a bunch of stories trying to reignite more black-white rage with Trayvon Martin and that kind of thing.
Right.
I think the majority of people are starting to see through that, and they're not really taking that bait. Do you think that's kind of true?
Well, you know, so there was about three or four movies that came out that tried to re-stimulate black people into that kind of mindset and into that kind of spirit. Once again, we have the rah-rah-rah and fan the flames of the campaign to hate whitey, kill whitey. So we'll put out the Django, and then they put out 12 Years a Slave, and some of these, The Butler, and some of these other movies. And it's like, we want to re-stimulate black people to think that, you know, back to the whole slavery thing. And during that period, it was, the tensions were exacerbated once again, and we had to set us back to that period. We were so far beyond that period. You understand what I'm saying? As
Absolutely.
Far as the relationships are concerned. But leave it up to these people, they'll green light these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the award show comes around, it's the best actor, the best this, the best picture, the best whatever, whatever, whatever. And we would think, well, damn, that's the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I should be thinking like that. Let me become a slave again. Let me just tear off my fucking clothes and wear chains around my neck and wrists and ankles. I guess that's the sentiment. That's the spirit. And it's not.
Wow. You know what? I never thought about the subliminal imagery of, you know, a lot of the the rap artists. They're shirtless. They're wearing a big chain. I never really thought about that, man.
That's exactly what it is. And they want us to get re-stimulated and start thinking in that mindset again. And then to the average unsuspecting fan, they're like, well, damn. So I went to go see this movie and we had the black hero killing white people. And then we had the butler. We had this subservient kind of position to white people. And it re-stimulates you. And you're walking around thinking with that mentality, and we are so far beyond it. This is 2014. The sad part about that is it may re-stimulate black people to feel that way, but it's re-educating white people to have to know that particular body of
that struggle.
Unfortunately, that body of work.
Yeah.
That struggle, because when white people think of those days, they think, "Wow, we were in a comfortable position. We owned everything, ran everything, and then we had people working for 400 and some odd years for us for free."
God. And but I mean, you said it yourself. Today, we're all debt slaves. I mean,
yeah.
The system has evolved. You know, obviously, slavery was a terrible thing, but traditional slavery requires the elite to house and clothe and feed them, whereas modern debt-based economic slavery, you got to clothe and house and feed yourself, and you're still no better off.
Exactly. So I guess it evened out and leveled the playing field. So much it leveled the playing field, I think we began to realize, like, wait a minute. I'm just like my friend Josh. Josh is like my friend Penny. You know, and, you know, we all work at, you know, this particular company, and they treat us all the same. I may think I'm privileged and I have a few extra benefits because I'm white, but nonetheless, they don't like any of us.
Yeah.
All of us are going to get the chip.
Exactly.
Now it's like, okay, you might have some privileges because you're white, but they don't like any of us.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, when I seen that police officer kick that white woman in the head, man, I just said to myself, wow.
Right. Well, that goes back to the doublespeak you were talking about, man. Like, police don't protect us. They're attacking us. Education doesn't make us smarter. It makes us dumber. The medical industry is not
right.
Making us well. It's making us sick. The defense industry is all right. About attack. It's totally backwards.
Totally backwards. But now, if we're still thinking 12 years a slave, the butler, and we're still thinking, you know, the Django.
True.
Then we're never going to understand those things that you just ran down.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the show. I want to get a little more positive. A question that I usually like to ask people like yourself, any kind of artists that I have on the show, is do you have any advice for young artists that may be struggling to find happiness or success, trying to get out of those 9-to-5 jobs and fulfill their passion? Do you have any words of inspiration for them?
I don't know if this will inspire young people, young musicians, young artists. I say regardless of your opposition, regardless of your set of circumstances in your particular life right now, music is a universal language. And if I want to communicate to people on a universal level, all right, I don't have to fit my particular kind of sound, my music, what's resonating from me. I don't have to fit it in any of these pre-prescribed boxes that they have set up for music. I could just do me. I could just do my music. I could just be me. And if it resonates with someone in Detroit or Dubai, I'm fine. If it resonates someone in Indiana or Iraq or Iran, then absolutely fine. The internet provides that for us. You understand what I'm saying? We can have a global fan base.
Yeah.
Now, I say to those people, do your music. I don't care if it's in your bedroom or in a million-dollar studio. Nonetheless, record it and get it out. And trust me, someone will resonate and like your music somewhere on the planet.
That's good.
Create
advice, man.
The global fan base. There's a global fan base. There's people that call me from places I can't even damn pronounce.
Yeah, and you can bypass all those traditional gatekeepers.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. And then we cannot be afraid to make our music available to the people, and in some cases, and in most cases, for free.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to purchase a collective body of work, i.e., your CD, or i.e., you want to be able to download it on your phone, and that's the sad part about this, because now the phone companies and the communication companies are now the record companies.
Mm. Yeah.
T-Mobile and AT&T are now the record companies.
Consolidation of power.
Exactly, and the same people that control the AT&Ts control what's left of the music industry, what's left of the film industry. So now as soon as the movie comes out, you can see it on Netflix, or you can see it, you know, on your TV, because we want to quell this whole idea of bootlegging.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? But hey, if they created the technology, we're just using the technology to defend ourselves. How dare you charge me $11 to get into a 2-hour movie?
Yeah.
And I have my whole family with me. You understand what I'm saying? It's 4 of us. That's 4 times 11.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. And then if you want to eat anything, good God.
That is ridiculous. Fucking $4 for a bag of goddamn potato chips.
Yeah, it's an old system that's kind of waiting to die.
Exactly. It's because it's feeding on itself. And there's no life in no system, like that. So for that young cat and that young lady that has probably have a beautiful sound, beautiful music, and a body of work, I say create a global fan base and find your own way that you would like to communicate with your fan base. And do not let anybody control who your fans could and should be, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Half of my fans don't even look like me.
Well said, man. I mean, Griff, it's been an amazing time talking to you. Quite a wild ride indeed. You're definitely one of the people I respect most because you could have kept your head down and your mouth shut and just became another highly profitable false idol, but you took the path less traveled, you know, the path of truth, and that's a powerful thing, man.
Right, simply because I care about the human family and I want to raise the vibrational pitch of the human family regardless of what color and complexion you are. I care about the human family in general, and I want to raise the consciousness level as Public Entity started out doing. Of course, we're going to have some bumps on the way doing that, but nonetheless, you know, I care about the average person. I mean, my thing is, if you and I are walking the same path and down the same road as travelers, if I have some water and you don't and you're thirsty, you could have some of mine. We're fellow travelers on the same path.
Amen, man. Before we go, would you like to tell the people a bit about your book or your website or anything else you got going on?
Yes, my website is www.pgriff.info, where you can order my books, The Psychological Covert War on Hip-Hop, Dealing with the Illuminati's Takeover of Hip-Hop. My book, Analytics, which is 20 years of interviews and conversations with yours truly, Professor Griff of Public Enemy. I released a book called Acapella Revolution, giving those young artists formulas and methodologies of how to do research, how to construct songs, making your songs more complete. And I released an audio book recently called The Warrior's Tapestry for those brothers and sisters and those people out there that have a hard time reading and staying focused. You can listen to it, which I think is a beautiful thing. People can reach me directly, man. I'm very accessible. I know you had a hard time reaching me, but my phone number is 678-557-2919. That's 678-557-2919. I do a radio show every single day, 1 to 4, on the Empowerment Radio Network with Zaza Ali. And that's tunein.com/radio/ Empowerment Radio Network. Every day, 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 1 to 4, Monday through Friday. And of course, last but not least, I'm still in Public Enemy. We're still doing shows and concerts. We're still making music. And the rebroadcasting of My Enemy Minds radio show that comes on Tuesday on Blog Talk at 8 o'clock, Public Enemy. You can go to publicenemy.com and hear the rebroadcast of some of my radio shows, which is a beautiful thing. Communication is where it's going to be up in the next 4 or 5 years. We have to be able to communicate with one another in the language that we all speak. And my language, like your language, is the language of truth.
Amen, man. Very cool. Like I said, a lot of people can talk about rejecting the temptation to sell your soul to the big machine, but you've actually had the chance and come through, and that's another story. So you're the man. I hope we can do this again sometime. There's a ton more meat on these bones, for sure. But that about does it, man. Take care of yourself. Thanks.
All right. You take care also, man. And reach out to me anytime. And you take care. Peace.
For sure. Peace. All right, people, that does it. Another THC in the bag. We're coming up on the next money bomb. We're barely over $200, which is sad. I would like to see it get bigger, so please donate to keep this system alive. This is episode 104, so we're going to have a winner on 105. So you got until the end of the week to get in the pot. I'm going to pick someone to give the money to on Sunday the 27th. Let's make it happen. I love you guys. Thanks again to Professor Griff for stopping in. Please take a second to puff puff pass this episode around, and I'll see you next week. Your move, Suge Knight. Power. Fight the power.
saying, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? My beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. Don't rush the show.
You got to go with what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy got a...